Welcome back to Vulcan Hello, the Incomparables podcast dedicated to new Star Trek. I am Scott McNulty, and I am joined, as always, by Mr. Jason Snell.
Scott, I have some Vulcan Hello trivia for you on this momentous occasion.
I would love it to hear what it is.
So this is our first episode of Vulcan Hello about Star Trek Discovery. In the Vulcan Hello podcast feed numbering system, which this is number 17. But this is our 52nd episode where we have talked about Star Trek in this format, because we did it 35 times in the old TV podcast feed. And then when Star Trek Picard was coming out, and we're like, oh, but we want to maintain continuity with all the stuff we've done before, and yet it's a different TV show, so how do we do this? And it became a new podcast. Okay, great. So we've done, we did 35 there. This is the 17th, I think. I think we've done 16 Vulcan Hellos in here, and this is number 17, so 52 total. But it is a milestone because we're back on how this all started, which is Star Trek Discovery.
That's right. Season 3 of Star Trek Discovery premiered today. Well, when you're listening to this,
for
that
us,
may not be true.
It's today. And I mean, CBS drops it a little early, so it was probably before midnight Pacific. But I actually checked at 11 p.m. last night Pacific time, just in case. I was really tired and I wanted to go to bed, but I was like, if Discovery's on, I will watch it. And it wasn't up at 11, because it's usually later than that. It's usually more like 11:15 or 11:30, because I did that with Picard a couple of times, and I was like, and I went to bed. So that's my story. But anyway, yes, it was on Thursday, October 15th, is the official release date of Discovery. And we love you, listeners. We love you. But what we aren't going to do is... Scott's not going to watch the show at 3 a.m. Eastern, not going to podcast at 4 a.m. Eastern. It's not going to happen. No. We're here in our traditional time, the evening, when we've had time to watch live our lives and watch the show. And now we're here.
I was tempted briefly, Jason, to wake up at 3 a.m. and watch it. But then I thought, that's dumb.
That's a dumb idea.
Yep, I didn't do it.
If I had woken up like in the middle of the night, like I had a nightmare or something, I'd be like, oh, I can watch Discovery now. I might have done it, but I slept pretty well. So
yes, if one of the twins had freaked out and I was wide awake, I might have tried to watch it.
Yeah, but instead we rested easy. We got our sleep. We got our beauty sleep, which is why we are so beautiful. And we're here now to talk about That Hope Is You, part one. And I need to ask you I've got some more information for you,
goodness.
At least according to Wikipedia and according to the Ready Room Will Wheaton show as well.
Oh, I haven't watched that yet.
It's really good. And we're going to talk about David Ajala, who is Book.
Oh.
And it's mostly an interview with him. He's great. I highly recommend, if you've got access to the Ready Room with Will Wheaton, that you watch his interview with David Ajala, because he's a very cool guy. I really love that interview. It was maybe my favorite Star Trek value-added media segment since they've come back. I really like him. He's a Shakespearean actor. He worked with Patrick Stewart at the Royal Shakespeare Company. It's kind of a little Star Trek connection there. But they do a little montage and they show some of the episode titles of forthcoming episodes. And I'm just going to say, next week's episode is apparently not That Hope Is You Part 2. Nor does it seem, according to Wikipedia, that any episode this season is called That Hope Is You Part 2, which I don't know. I don't understand. I'll also point out, without spoiling it, that there is an episode later this season that is a part 3 of a pair of episodes from a different Star Trek show. So I don't know if they're trolling us,
Jason,
or what, but I love it. But it's baffling, but I love it. So that's all I'm saying is, this is That Hope Is You Part 1. Apparently there's no part 2. Or is there? I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. Well, I think that kind of sums up where we find ourselves in season 3 of Discovery, right? Because it is, and I've read some reviews and some of there's always griping with things, because that's what they're doing. They're reviewing it and criticizing things, so you have to... Even if it was perfect, which of course nothing is, you have to find something that's wrong with it. And the thing that people, at least in the reviews that I read, were complaining about was that it doesn't, once again, this old chestnut of, it doesn't feel like Star Trek. It feels like some generic science fiction show, which I don't really get.
And I really strongly don't agree with, given how this episode ends.
No, I know. And I think that the thing I like about this so much is that So Burnham is now 930 years in the future, right?
Yeah.
Or her future, because she's from our future.
Whoa. So confusing. Oh.
But and things are very different 930 years in the future, which you would imagine would be the case. And so the things we know about Star Trek, the things that we take for granted when we watch, you know, the Next Generation original series, are not necessarily the case in season 3 of Discovery, which I find exciting.
Yes. Yeah, it's a decision that they made, and we detailed it as we went, which is this is clearly a two-year-long process of unwinding the original premise of the show in order to get it out from under all of the Star Trek canon. And, you know, last season's plot arc was kind of mechanical because it was really... It was all about just getting them out from under their premise, with the red ball of death that turned out to be the red ball of knowledge that leads to death and all of that. Mm-hmm. But in the end, what we get is a show that is about a set of Star Trek people from the early days of Star Trek, from basically the Pike era, flung forward in time to a new strange era that's never been explored in Star Trek canon. And, you know, as we'll get to as we talk about this episode, like Star Trek... Discovery was already kind of about holding to the ideals of Starfleet and the Federation, and believing in those ideals. It's a very idealistic show and has been since the beginning. But now it's baked into the premise with this, which is essentially this is all about believing in the tenets of the Federation and wanting to get it back to where it was when they left, because they've entered this kind of lawless period where, due to various catastrophes that are ill-defined for the moment, that the Federation is sort of more of a legend than an authority. But not only do I love that premise, I adore the fact that we are out from under the crush of canon. And while people will keep on saying, well, why don't they just go back in time? Why don't they go home now that they've taken, presumably, you know, the Discovery and the Data and all of that to the future? I think that as a person who's watched a lot of Doctor Who, I'm going to answer that question for you, which is history shows they never did. And therefore, they never did. And so let's just have a TV show now, can we?
That's right. Let's move on. And yeah. We are outside of having to make everything line up and have cranky nerds sending them emails.
And instead, we can like riff on Star Trek and say, what if we remix this a little bit? And we've got, like, in this episode, we've got, like, Andorian guards and Orion guards, and we've got, like, a Tellarite thug, and we've got a thug who's kind of, like, Morn from Deep Space Nine.
Yes, a Lurian.
Yeah, some people know the name of Morn's race, and some people don't care, and that's you and me, apparently.
How dare you, Jason?
Sorry. We love
Morn is an iconic character.
He is, but I don't need to know what race he's from because there's just
that's
one
true.
As far as I'm
concerned.
But anyway, there's
another. See him and say, hey, there's Morn.
And that's cool because in this episode, we get, like, it's Star Trek. It's totally Star Trek. And right down to the opening credits, right, which show, like, the old phaser of Discovery turning into, like, more future phaser and, like, the badge turning into a future-y badge.
Yes.
Like, that's all what this is about is entering this empty space of unexplored Star Trek where we don't know what's going to happen next. It's so nice to be there. I felt, you know, we talked about this with Picard too. It was like, it's so nice to see what happens after Star Trek Nemesis because it's been so long, but it also has none of the crush of like, don't do too much because of canon. Whereas Discovery's first two seasons and Enterprise. So like literally the last five seasons worth of televised Trek before Picard were all coloring in the margins of existing Trek canon, and Discovery is just gone, like way out there. I love it.
Yeah, it's great. I think it's I'm excited to watch the next 12 episodes of this season and see where they take us.
Yeah,
who knows? So I guess we should talk about where they took us in that Hope Is You Part 1, Part 2, TBD.
Did you watch Lost, Scott? Did you watch Lost? Because the opening scene of this episode is basically the opening scene of Season 2, Episode 1 of Lost, where there's a guy who gets up every day. He's got a routine. In this case,
he has a bird alarm clock.
Yeah, he's got a holographic bird alarm clock and a Federation binder, and then Lost, he's got like a bunch of record albums, and it's very much the same thing. And then we come back to him later, but it's a very nice little moment of like, you know, what is this guy doing with his little holographic table and his holographic bed and his holographic bird?
Mm-hmm.
That's an alarm clock.
I've only watched one episode of Lost, and I know you're a big fan of Lost, and it was the series finale, which was not the best episode to watch.
No. Anyway, so there is in the beginning of season two of Lost, there's a very much a guy who wakes up every day in a bunker, and when you first see it, as a viewer of Lost, you're like, I don't even know what I'm seeing. Like, how is this related to the show? And then it is explained how this guy is related to the show. And that's the same trick being pulled here. And we'll get back to him.
And they released the first scene before the show aired.
Right.
But I don't believe they included that part.
No, it's literally just the part where the next scene where Burnham, comes out in her red angel outfit from the space-time anomaly and crashes into our new character, Book, played by David Ajala, and his spaceship. And she, glances off his spaceship, but it's enough to wreck both of them and make them crash land on a planet below.
Yes. And once again, we've said this before, but Discovery is beautiful, beautifully shot. It's lovely. The landscapes look great. And so she is now not trapped, but she doesn't know where she is. And in a very good scene, she kind of, the first thing she asks is, are there life signs, right? Because the whole point was go to the future, save the galaxy.
Yeah. And if you don't remember, I mean, I think that if you've been refreshed on season two, that her exclaim of relief is so set up. It's essentially the last payoff of season two, which is the whole reason they've sacrificed their lives and fled to the future is to save the future of organic life, right? Like the artificial life was going to destroy all living things in the galaxy. And so when she gets the scan that says, I found life signs, it doesn't even matter what the life signs are, because this means her sacrifice was not in vain. They did it. They got they made this time travel shenanigans move and it worked.
Saved all the things.
And so she's yeah. And this is all in Iceland too, which is beautiful. It's just amazing. Mm-hmm. The landscape here looks like nothing. It looks very much like a weird alien planet, but it's Iceland. That's what it is. They shot all this stuff in Iceland.
Oh, fun. You are just full of fun facts today, Jason.
I did my research. I mean, it's week one. I'll be lazy next week, but this week I got stuff.
Well, I like it. And so then there are – I also enjoyed the part where she kind of repeated her name and rank and all of that stuff, because she's kind of grounding herself and making sure. I felt like, you travel through time. You might want to make sure that you remember everything, and all the parts that you are where you left them.
Also, it's like the end of the story. I think for her in that moment, she's very much like, I did. When I say it's the end of season two, essentially, that's happening here, this is what's going on in Burnham's mind, too. It's like, I accomplished my mission. It's almost like being assigned a suicide mission. Like, you're not going to live, but you're going to score a great victory for our side and save a lot of people. And then you do it and you're still alive. And you're like,
and there's no going back.
Now, what? And so she's like, I guess I'm just going to walk into town and surrender and they'll do what they want. And I'm going to give my information and we'll see what happens. Like because clearly she's not even mentally prepared for what comes next. Fortunately, the Red Angel, as not seen in the previous season, has a little survival kit in the backpack in the back of the Red Angel before she sends the Red Angel back to send the signal to Spock, which we saw in the last episode of season two.
Wraps up.
But she's like, nice. I like that moment because she's like, get up, walk. And she's obviously hurt because she slammed into the ground at a very high speed, even with shields and stuff. And she's convincing herself, like, you got to go on, right? Like, there's nothing. Mm-hmm. What else am I going to do? I got to go on. Fortunately, that ship she ran into is crashed over there, so she could just walk over there and see what's going on over there.
Follow the smoke and meet our other main character for this episode. And one assumes a pivotal character in the whole season.
In the whole season.
He's
in the opening credits.
Oh, that's true. So, yes, he's a main – he's one of the – And I read, so they meet Burnham and Book. We don't find out his name until later because he doesn't want to tell her.
It's very much, I don't want to know the name of this dog because I may need to kill this dog later. So he's like, don't tell me your name. I don't want to hear it.
And that's what we figure out because people generally in 930 years ago, pretty welcoming. want to help out, right? Especially if you see a Starfleet officer and if you're in the Federation. He has the opposite reaction to seeing the Federation symbol and doesn't want to even know Burnham's name, doesn't want to know where she came from, doesn't want anything. There's a little fisticuffs.
They fight. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like every superhero comic ever, which is that your heroes have to fight before they realize they're on the same side. Two things about this scene. One is, if you're going to have a spaceship on a TV show, it's great if it can turn invisible, because then you don't have to spend a lot of money showing a spaceship. And books got one of those economical cloaked spaceships, which is very good. Then the other thing I like about it, and this goes to where this episode goes later, which is he seems so hostile here, right?
Very hostile.
But in retrospect, what you realize is, he doesn't trust Burnham because he is an outlaw of like a good kind, but he is surrounded by people who are untrustworthy. So he doesn't even want to know her name, because it's just going to be another con. It's another ripoff. It's another terrible person. And it's only late in the game that he really realizes that she's not, you know, she's serious. She is who she says she is. And she discovers, as we do, that he is not the kind of shady character that he seems at this. I mean, it's tipped off when he's up in space, because the guy who's chasing him is like, that's my cargo. And he says, don't you think that it's the cargo's decision, or that's its decision? And it's very clear. It's like, that's a living creature. And, it's set up. But like in this moment, they're at odds because she doesn't understand what's going on. And he just doesn't trust anybody. He can't. And so you end up in this dynamic where it leads to him seeming like an outlaw for a long time before you realize that, we've all been reading him wrong, and that he just doesn't trust Burnham because he doesn't trust anybody, because he's always in opposition to this whole smuggler culture that he's involved with.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I thought that they did that very well throughout this episode, because I wasn't expecting to find so. This podcast is full of spoilers. So we find out he is basically like a conservationist. He goes around and collects endangered species and brings them to this planet. I was not expecting that to be what he was doing. So good job, episode.
Yeah, there's enough misdirect there for you to not know. It's not ice cream that he's smuggling.
No, it's not ice cream.
Although it could have been, but it was not.
Ice cream is delicious.
And he says also that this is not Terra Elysium, the planet she was gaming for, but Heme. And what's funny about it is, I don't know if they just changed the name of the planet over 900 years, or if she really missed like what planet she was going for, and it's just not resolved. Like, did she miss what planet she was going for, or is this that planet, but so much later? We just don't know.
We don't know. And so obviously Burnham wants to find the Discovery, because she assumes they were following her.
There's no sign of them.
And so let's find them. So she has decided, and a good line, I think this episode's full of a lot of good lines, where she says, I'm stranded and I need to trust someone, and I'm sorry if you don't want to be that person, but you are. I am trusting you and you need to help me. And so Book decides to help her. Turns out he has a very large cat.
He does. He saves endangered animals and also has a cat.
He does. He has a Maine Coon cat, I believe.
Very fluffy.
It is very fluffy. It looks like a very well-behaved and snuggly cat. Mm-hmm. Grudge is the name of the
Grudge,
cat.
Yes. There's a line, too, about... So we get our little... we get a couple little details here. He says that the Gorn destroyed 2 light-years worth of subspace, which is...
Not good.
Interesting. Bad Gorn. And also that we learn that dilithium... is rare, that in the burn, which is this cataclysmic event that happened where the galaxy took a hard left, most of the dilithium exploded, causing like a disaster. I assume we're going to hear more about that, and that might even be part of the story arc for the season, although I'm torn. Do I really need to know why it happened? Do I really care? Or is it really just about fixing what it caused? But regardless, I appreciated the technobabble where he went into a list of the things
alternate fuel sources
that you can use to travel around in space. So he says, I need a dilithium recrystallizer, right? Which is a thing that, remember, originally you weren't supposed to have, but in Star Trek, it's like, or you could recrystallize dilithium and then reuse it, which is like the electric car of Star Trek. But he says, I also can't do quantum slipstream because of this reason, and don't even get me started on trilithium. And I just, it made me laugh because, I mean, it's so very Star Trek and also really funny of like, don't, it's like he doesn't want the tier one tech support, right? He's like, look, I've tried all the things already.
It's fine.
But I know what my problem is. Can you just get me to your manager? And it's a good moment.
That's right. And so Burnham needs to a subspace communicator, which she does not have. And Book needs dilithium, and he does not have that. So he says, hey, I know where we can solve both of our problems. If we go to this trading post, we can trade some of your antiques, and I'll get dilithium, and they have a communications hub that you can use. Everything will be fine. And you think, well, this episode's going to wrap up very quickly because they're going to solve all their problems. Just go to this place. They go to this place.
Yeah, it's very impressive.
Mentioned, it's like very nice,
like skyscrapers and stuff, and then like a big floating thing above it to say that it's the future.
And the floating thing is where they're going.
Yeah,
which is a smuggler's den run by Orions and Andorians together, which is unusual. And we have some very good Andorian scenes of a surly Andorian guard not wanting to let her in.
Love them. That's like all. I mean, that actually is probably a very polite Andorian guard, but they're all surly. So
that's true. He's like low. His surliness is a set on low. But
I mean, he's
in
customer
surly.
Service basically. He's like interfacing with the public, so he's probably the most polite Andorian. Still very surly.
Very surly, and he does not want to let her in, but he is told to let her in, so they come in, and you know, there's scenes of strange looking aliens and holograms everywhere, and personal transporters, and Burnham is very impressed with all the strange new things that she's seeing, which is a lot of fun. And this is where the first kind of Burnham has been seemingly hoodwinked, because he says, hey, Book says, hey, here's the subspace hub. Good luck finding your ship. And she says, great, thank you. And she walks in, and she is in a stasis field, because it is not, in fact, the communications hub, Jason. It is the vault, which apparently is very easy to just walk into.
Yeah, well, you can try. You can try to walk into
the vault. I guess you can try. She does fail. And then she is in the stasis tube, and Book takes her stuff and leaves her there, and she's not happy.
And she's not. One of the things that's a challenge for this season that I've been wondering all along what they were going to do is how do you – so Star Trek is already a vision of the future, and now you have to be further in the future. So how do you take your vision of the future and the people in it and then throw them further into the future and have like new tech that looks futuristic even in a Star Trek context? And they have these like programmable matter or whatever. It's like these holograms that come out of the things and all that. Like, it's fine. Like, that's good. There's more holograms. But also the one that made me laugh, but also that I appreciated that they did it, was the personal transporters. And we later get a chase with personal transporters, but like that makes so much sense, right? Like the ability to just transport from place to place. It has real security questions that I have, but yes, I like it because it's like an instant moment of like, oh, even by Star Trek terms, this is the future. I enjoyed that.
And Burnham was very impressed with the personal transporters. And this, I kind of want, Jason, I don't know about you, but now I kind of want, although sadly, later in this episode, they both die. I want a spin-off series with the Orion and Andorian who apparently run this place. Because
it'll be a prequel. It'll be a prequel.
I found them very entertaining.
About those guys and what they do all day as the Requiem security guards. We'll find out.
Or I don't know if they're in charge or security guards or whoever they are, but they are entertaining. They are they interrogate Burnham because she's trying to break into their vault, and they don't appreciate that, and she's not being cooperative, so they spray her with some kind of truth powder, I guess.
Oh man.
And it has unintended impact on her, I think. Yeah. It makes her a little loopy, and
she starts to talk, and it's very much one of those like, well, yeah, it's supposed to make you talk and tell the truth. And she's like, oh, yeah, it's working. And she's very talkative, not as informative, but very talkative. And there are a bunch of funny things there, including her moment where she's like, you can never give this to Tilly, which is a great moment. And she does say, among the lines I wrote down, I do have a story. It's a super cool story, but in a devastating way, which is like, there's Star Trek 2 or Star Trek Discovery Season 2. And and also, yes, as you said earlier, I saved all the things.
All the things. Also true. I mean, she's not lying in any of this, but it's not being very helpful to the people who are trying to ask her questions.
No, not at all.
No, they are not happy. But then finally they get to... who took it? Book is having trouble selling his ill-gotten gains to a very uninterested Andorian, Orion woman, I think.
Yep.
And she walks away. And then, oh no, I guess we kind of skipped over this, but he was being chased by the original courier in the beginning of the episode.
Yeah.
He shows up. He's not happy. He wants to kill Booker. And a fight ensues. And
Burnham, and it's a big wacky fight because Burnham is there, and then they do the thing where she winks at him, and suddenly they have the upper hand and steal the most valuable thing that is in this whole place, which is laying on a table over there.
And a lovely display table
of the most valuable thing in the galaxy.
That's right. Not in the vault, because why would you put that in the vault?
And then they just beam out, which is like, I kept waiting for the technobabble that is like, well, you know, this is shielded. We have to go over there because the personal transporter. Nope. They're like getting shot at by these giant, like,
for convenience,
shattering, you know, glass shattering things. And then they just leave.
Yep. They're like, peace out. And then there is a very interesting, it's interesting and exciting kind of personal transporter chase across the planet. We don't know the range of personal transporters, but we do know it takes 30 seconds between transports to recharge.
So they fight, they wait, and they're talking, and then they find them, and then they fight, and then they leave. But they have the delay where like they have to fight and survive before they can transport away, which is a nice little mechanism we may see again that I kind of enjoyed, that allowed this to be this kind of surprising fight battle that we have not seen in Star Trek before. That was good. A little action, kicking and punching and phasering people to death, you know.
Yes, a lot of Andorians die in this episode. While I was watching that, I thought, because in the first few sequences, the bad guys always appear in front of Burnham and Book, and I thought, well, why wouldn't they transport, like, surround them? And then the next scene, they do that.
It
doesn't work out well. But then at the end, they also surround them.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work out well for them either.
If you're behind, you could presumably, like, find out where they went and scan there and, like, set up how you're going to beam in so that you're a little bit late to the party, but you have some positional advantage over them. I don't know. I also liked the moment where he pushes her off a cliff. She gets mad at him for that, but it's like, it's part of his plan, which is like, we jump off the cliff and then we beam in underwater, and that means they, you know, for whatever reason, just go with it, they can't track them, and that is going to give them time to get back to his ship. But they will catch up, and I'm sitting there thinking, well, surely they'll catch up with you eventually, because there's only so far you could go. It's just this planet. And indeed, they do, ultimately. But I like it, and she gets to be mad at him, and we get to have that moment where he pushes her off the cliff, and like it's all very exciting and fun.
It is. And he says, before he pushes her off the cliff, he says, you're about to be mad at me, and pushes her off the cliff. And he was right.
Yeah, he says, I told you. I said.
He's a quick study and a good judge of character. Mm-hmm. And there's, in between the cliff and getting back to the ship with the big kind of showdown, or the denouement, we get this scene where Burnham and Book are next to a lake or something, and Burnham is injured, and they're chit-chatting. And we find out, I don't know how to describe this, Jason, but he has some kind of ability to commune with plants and animals, and he like summons forth an alien aloe vera leaf and puts some lotion on Burnham's
his
arm.
His forehead gets all glowy and a plant grows.
Yes, and he chants something in some language, and a plant grows, and it helps with her injury.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, this is probably going to play into the plot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm a clever viewer.
Yeah, you know, he's got some unrevealed powers of some sort.
Yes, and we find out later his whole we'll get to that. So then they get back to the ship. Everyone appears. The two our favorite Andorian and Orion show up, and you think, oh no, they're in trouble. They say, give us the code so we can get our cargo back. And Book says, well, you don't want the code. And they say, well, really, we do want the code. Turns out the code is sticky, which is not a great code. Once again, Star Trek InfoSec, not great. But it could have been all part of his plan because he is transporting, what are they called? Transworms, I guess?
Transworms, yes.
And apparently, transworms are quick to anger. And
yes.
So the transworm jumps out and eats a bunch of people.
Yeah.
Which I was not expecting. And no. I did laugh when it tries to eat Burnham and spits her out that is from Lower Decks.
Yeah,
as
when
well.
He tries to eat Burnham, it's funny, but I know she's going to get spat out. And he talks to the transworm and then it spits her out. What's really funny is it spits her out with a velocity that I was not expecting. She shoots across the meadow by the, you know, by the lakeside for, she's like 20 feet before she lands. It's that part made me laugh. Like, it's the transworms are not gentle creatures.
No, they are not. And I enjoyed her reaction when she said, I really did not know how this day was going to go.
No, a heck of a day, right? Because it presumably started with the battle, you know, on the other side of the wormhole. And now she's getting eaten by a big transworm and spat out. So what a day, huh? It's like 2020, basically. She had a day from 2020, right. Burnham did.
And this is where we find out he is an intergalactic conservationist from a family of hunters, apparently.
Yeah.
Who every once in a while, one of the family members is born with the ability to commune with animals and plants, I guess.
So he's a renegade from a very bad family, which makes him good.
That's right. And he was, you know, concerned about the animal, and he and Burnham are on the same page.
Yeah, they take the transworm to the transworm sanctuary, which is a lovely place that's very much like that place where Saru went mad, where they've color graded all the trees to be red leaves instead of green, and they all just frolic. All the transworms are frolicking in the lake.
That's right. And they return her in, or bring her in time for their mating cycle, which is nice. So hooray, more transworms.
More transworms. They're endangered. You got to save the transworms.
Exactly. And the Federation is not around to enforce the Endangered Species Act.
And yes, and unlike Star Trek IV, where it's adorable whales, here, the Transformers, horrible murderous monsters, but still worth saving.
It is true that all life is precious. Jason.
And they only murdered bad people that time.
So it's fine. And then, so now Burnham, they have delivered the Transworms. Book feels... you know, that Burnham's mission is worthy of his help, and he kind of feels bad. So he's like, okay, there is one place I can take you that maybe can help find your ship.
And you keep wanting to say his name. I think he has revealed that his name is Cleveland Booker, but he just goes by Book. So he has a name.
He has a name. He tells her because he didn't want to tell her before. So then he tells her the whole name, and it's a moment that shows, okay, I trust you, and I'm letting you in.
And he said, and I like you so much, I'm going to take you to the crazy broken Federation relay station that is in the midst of debris, including Federation starships, where there's this weirdo who gets up every day and puts on a suit hoping somebody from the Federation will come, because I think you're that person. And she is that person.
We see
our guy from the first scene.
Ah.
This poor guy who is waiting for all this time for somebody to show up who has something to do. And it's a great moment because it's like, welcome, can I help you?
Oh, no, I'm fine, thank you.
No, and she's like, you know, and then she gets to say, I'm Commander Michael Burnham, USS Discovery, and he's like, oh boy, technically I don't work here because my father worked here and there was nobody to hire me after he died, so I've just been hanging around, but I would be happy to help.
I know how to use the holograms.
Yeah, so I don't have a long-range sensor, so I can only see about 30 sectors. There are two Federation ships that I can see that are flying around right now, which is two. It's better than none.
That's true.
And
a lot.
And
one of them is not Discovery.
Yeah. Sadly. And finally, Burnham says something that I wish she had said earlier on to Book, but I guess I know why. It just didn't come up. But it's the I'm literally from 1,000 years ago, and I came through a time wormhole, and now I'm here. And his response is, and I'm looking for my friends. And it's very much one of those, well, as you know, that means they could show up. And she's like, yeah. Tomorrow, 1,000 years from now. I know. It's a good, I like it because it's she's finally admitting, like, oh, it's time travel. Right?
Like, oh, time travel is the worst.
They could be whatever. And that, so that part, like, it's a nice admission, but then it's just so such a sweet moment where he says, I'm not a commissioned officer. I wasn't sworn in.
Yes.
I you know, I can't raise the flag, but I watch the office every day. And she says, I'll tell you what. I need an acting communications officer, and I'm going to give you a field commission to join Starfleet. And he's like,
ooh. Ooh.
And then they raise the flag, and like, I don't know how much
and
of the Federation exists.
She lets him raise the flag. Yes,
yeah, it's so good. And so what we get is not quite what I was expecting, which was like, oh, the Federation fell. It's very much because there's a whole season to come. He's like, there's a couple of ships out there, but I can't see far away. I don't know how much of the Federation exists. I'm just trying to keep this little part of it alive. You know, hope is a powerful thing. Our numbers are few, but our spirit is undiminished. It's a very rousing kind of ending of like I said at the beginning of this podcast, that Star Trek Discovery's always kind of been about Federation ideals, but now they're being put to the test in a different way, which is how do we get the Federation, you know, find and restore the Federation. And that's clearly what this season is all about. But that character is the guy in the Starbase, basically. I love that character because he's a true believer.
He is.
Who's been waiting his whole life and has, today's the day.
Today's the day. And unlike Burnham, who, you know, two days ago, I don't know when this happens, a couple of days ago, was in the Federation among Starfleet, the fully functioning Federation.
Yeah, yesterday.
He has been waiting 40 years in this office with no functioning.
Just his father's stories about Starfleet, right? Not even having seen it himself, just his father's stories about the Federation and Starfleet.
And who knows what those Federation ships are out there.
Yeah.
And they could be shuttlecraft. We don't know.
We don't know.
And so I found that scene to be very...
Runabouts. We got two runabouts floating
right,
around.
Who knows? Very well done and moving.
Yeah.
Just because and it's setting the tone for the rest of the season, right? We need to give people hope.
And it's a premise that is at once very not Star Trek that we've seen, but also very much honoring the ideals of Star Trek and what Star Trek is all about fundamentally. And having seen this crew through the first two seasons get challenged and sort of stand up for the ideals of the Federation and the ideals of Starfleet, it seems to me like the perfect group to do this sort of thing. This show has always sort of been about this, even though they've had to kind of navigate all sorts of weird things about the premise of the show to get to this point. This is what this show is about. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that the TV show Gene Roddenberry's Andromeda, which was on in the 90s with Hercules.
Kevin Sorbo.
Kevin Sorbo, TV's Hercules. As the lead actor in that, was a Gene Roddenberry premise that was essentially this premise.
This,
right, which is that I mean, again, I really feel like Gene Roddenberry filed the serial numbers off of his Star Trek script and they made it into this. After he died, they made it into the show. But basically the premise was, imagine if Captain Kirk went through a wormhole 1,000 years and came out in a future where the Federation had fallen, what would he do? He'd try to put the Federation back together again. And that's what that show was about. And, you know, that's what this premise is to a certain extent. I like the variations I'm seeing here where they're, you know, we don't know. And it sounds like there's like sort of a Federation out there and we don't really know why it fell, but it seems like it fell because of a disaster, because of an ecological disaster almost. Instead of it being like a repudiation of the Federation. But it's very much the center cannot hold kind of, you could view it with despair, but Burnham immediately views it, I think, with optimism of like, let's figure this out, let's work the problem, let's get the Federation back.
And the Federation wasn't wiped out in one fell swoop, right? So it's kind of there was this large disaster of some sort, who knows,
and it's diminished, right?
And it degrades over time because and I think Burnham says, you know, the Federation isn't just starships and dilithium, so we can rebuild it.
Yeah.
And so and I
also let, you know, if I can find my friends, we have a spore drive.
What? Mm. So that's the first episode of season 3, Discovery.
Yeah.
Did it leave you hopeful for more Discovery and where the season might take us, Jason?
Hope is a powerful thing, Scott, but my spirit is undiminished. Yes, it's. I'm excited about this premise. I like it. I think it was an interesting choice, a bold choice, and a good choice to have this be the Burnham episode and to leave the rest of Discovery for presumably next episode. Because, I mean, the Next Time trailer was very much like this season on Discovery, so you don't really know when. I mean, obviously the crew is coming back, but like I assume it will be next time. But I think it was good to spend this time with Burnham and meet Book and get the lay of the land a little bit. And that's going to help, you know, presumably Burnham explain to the rest of her crew what this future is like and what they need to do and, you know, where they go from here. But like, I think this is a great premise. I love being without a map about canon, and that's the best kind of feeling. And it's been, you know, on TV, it's been since what, Voyager? Since we, I mean, other than Picard, right? Picard, which flows, but it's like,
Picard was doing a very different thing, though.
Yeah, but it's been since Voyager until 2020 when we've gotten the Picard season 1 and now this season 3 where it's like, ah, here we are. Just tell us stories and have them be Star Trek. How do you feel?
I feel good. I was excited to watch the episode. I was looking forward to it. Of course, looking forward to talking to you about it. And I was not disappointed. I was worried because, once again, I read a couple of reviews before I watched the show, because I don't really care about spoilers. And they weren't bad, but they were a little lukewarm.
Yeah.
I thought the episode was very good. So I don't know if that's just because I like Michael Burnham as a character so much, and the idea of kind of throwing her into the future and not knowing what's going on appeals to me more than the reviewers. But I thought it was a very solid episode and a great start to season 3.
Yeah.
That's my 2 cents.
All right.
And it had a large, very large cat in it. So what are you complaining about, people?
Yeah. Okay. Well, given that, given your response, I will not spray you with this weird powder.
No, please do. I need more powder in my
life. All right. You asked for it.